Welcome to Innovation Odyssey. This is the podcast of the global tech entrepreneur. Today I have with me someone very special. He sits all the way in Singapore. His name is Mitash Narayan. He is the managing partner of a stealth venture capital fund. Welcome, Mitash.
Hi, Renu. Yeah. So everybody calls me Mitash. That's my real name, but you know, just call me Max because that's easier and shorter. And you know, that's the name I've been rolling with in the business world. So thank you for having me on board.
My pleasure. I always like to start with asking the entrepreneur who they are and what do they do. You want to take a shot at that?
Yeah, sure. So my name is Max. I do a few things. So firstly, of course, I'm going to run the stealth fund with yours truly over here. So the both of us are going to be running a stealth fund and we will be launching hopefully pretty soon. And looking forward to that. Aside that, I'm also advisor to startups and even one conglomerate very recently. So in total, I'm advising about 30-ish companies in total. So that's advising companies. I also am a mentor to budding startup founders via the 100 Club in Singapore, so which is a private business network. So I've got roughly, I don't know how many, but many mentees. I don't actually count, but yeah. So that's just one of the many things I do. Before that, I was a startup founder 3 times. I've already done that. And then I went on to be a venture capitalist in a few funds and a venture scout as well and a venture partner. I mean, these are just synonymous terms. So now this is where I am and this is where I'm going.
Okay, that's a lot. And that's good. I can pick and choose what I want to ask on. Let's start with your startup experience. I am going to assume that you are not of very advanced age. That is the most polite way of talking or telling people. But you are fairly young and you've done 3 startups. Why? What was the motivation? What got you into this, into the world of entrepreneurship?
Well, you know what's the funny thing? A few years ago when I was still in high school, my teacher actually predicted and he told me once that, you know, I think you're going to make a businessman or you're going into the business field. And mind you, at the time, I had zero interest in business. I always thought it was BS and I thought it wasn't worth my time back then. That was like 6-7 years ago. And lo and behold, this is what I'm doing. This is my bread and butter now. So I started my first startup in 2020. I was 23 at the time. Right now, I'm 27. I've already built 3 startups, all from diverse industries. Experience-wise, I would say don't do it unless you are absolutely sure about it. It's not pleasant a journey. You will question your life every now and then when you're doing this. What really got me started was really passion. And I felt when going into university and doing my course that, you know, is this the most I have for my life? Is this the most I can do with myself? And, you know, I just started reading and reading and reading. And eventually I branched out and a few books, of course. But I think the main trigger was reading 0 to 1 by Peter Thiel. So everyone knows that book. And I think that was really the catalyst behind why I actually went on to this space.
What is interesting is that I read the book quite late in my entrepreneurial career. And I fell into my entrepreneurial career very randomly. It was more exactly what drove you, which is passion. And then I did all the journey. I started reading a lot of psychology books, sociological books. And then I finally, it's just about 3 months ago that I actually read that book and it resonated. But it took me all these knocks in life to resonate. So I'm impressed that you started with that and that was like a trigger for your entrepreneurial career. And what were all your startups about that you can disclose?
Okay, so as I can disclose, because so there are things that I can't disclose mainly for my third startup. My first startup was really just enterprise tech, as kind of like a CRM-ish software. That was my first startup. I felt miserably in that startup. It was so bad. But again, I was a first-time founder. I didn't know what I was doing. I had no co-founder. I had no guidance. I had nothing. So, you know, it's like basically, you know, trying to row a boat in the middle of the ocean at night. So I had no idea where I was going, no idea what I was doing. I knew I wanted to do this, but there was nothing. You know, I failed miserably and that was needed because, you know, from failure, we learned that's how business works. And the more failures, the better. But, you know, nobody likes to fail, of course, but that's how it is. Second startup was around blockchain. And, you know, we were actually doing all right. And again, I was a solo founder. I did not have a single co-founder for that one either. The hard part for that startup was the market killed us because mainly once the bear market hit after like mid late 2022, it just, you know, the activity for investment is just cut down severely, and a lot of things in the Web3 space just came to a standstill. The market just completely, it just stopped, and I don't think it has even gone anywhere near to that point, even right now. So, unfortunately, we were one of the casualties of the Web3 bear market. And my last startup, it was in the AI space. That was actually my one successful one, but unfortunately, due to NDAs, I can't go into further details just to stay out of trouble. So, yeah.
Okay. So you certainly like the tech part, right? Like, so when you decide that you want to do a company, are you enamored by the tech or by the business problem, or is it both?
Usually I look at the business problem first, because in a way, I'm not a tech guy by any means. I'm not an engineer. I am not some guy that knows software, knows how to code very well. I struggled to write lines of code for my first few startups. I had to use no-code tools, actually, because I was so bad at it. I tried my best to learn, but yeah, that's the most I can do as somebody that's not just not a tech guy. For me, it's always the business problem first, and then, you know, figuring out the solution afterwards. It's all like a, you know, kind of like a puzzle, and, you know, putting things together. But yeah, for me, it was really, it comes to the business issue first, and then, you know, we figure out what kind of solution we need. Ideally, the tech, because it is scalable, it is cheaper, and, you know, that's what really, for most instances, can cover a lot of business problems. But of course, for more complex ones, you need much more complex tech. You need, some instances, you might need hardware solutions. But, you know, I'm not a hardware guy by any means, and I don't think I ever want to go there. So, yeah.
And then you went into the VC world. Was that, like, did someone pull you in, or did you just decide and say, I want to do something different?
My end goal from doing startups is, of course, I'm not going to do that forever, you know. I had to look for what's next for me. And from a lot of startup founders, their what's next is actually becoming a venture capitalist, because who better to judge a startup than an ex-startup founder that actually was in the space and actually built hands-on. So I was actually there, and I started out actually as a venture scout at Go Ahead Ventures and a few others funds. That was really my beginning. That wasn't really like an intern or anything, because, you know, at that stage, it's just you be a venture partner, you be a venture scout. That's the kind of things you would get as a startup founder moving into the space. If you're venture backed, of course, you can probably join one of your investors and probably work something out. But for me, it was a little bit different. Situations were different. Circumstances were different. So that's how I pretty much started. So I started as a venture partner in a few funds or venture scout, and, you know, worked my way up. Went into Network VC, joined the investment team, did all sorts of stuff there as well. And now about to start my own one. Yeah.
Exciting. That's all I can say. How different is it? How different is it being on the other side?
A lot of times I see my own reflection in a lot of the startup founders in terms of especially making the mistakes. I see a lot of them going down the same path, like, you know, oh, we should do this, we should outsource this, we should maybe do that. And the biggest mistake I see startup founders doing are chasing investors. Please don't ever do that, okay? Chase your customers, chase your product, chase your excellence. Don't chase investors. You chase your excellence, you chase your customers, you chase your product, investors will come. A lot of startup founders, I cannot emphasize enough, stop chasing investors, please.
Okay. I think that is valuable. I have different, like, takeaways, but it's just the beginning of a long journey. So I'm going to hold up on my thoughts, but because I haven't been a VC. You also mentioned that you had two startups where you were a solo founder.
Correct. So my first startup, of course. Second startup also. Third startup, I had a co-founder, but I'm not going to go into details because of this is, I don't have an NDA around it, but, you know, because the situation was a little bit complicated, so I'm not going to go there. So.
And is there, I guess this is a very obvious question, is there a difference in the solo versus doing it with one person or maybe two people?
It is 10 times better. Please, 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 for startup founders out there who are still running solo, if your product is still very early, heed my advice. please find a co-founder. Go to YC Portal, go to anywhere, go to events, look for a co-founder. If your product's already out in the market, you're already like pretty much out there, yes, then you probably don't need one, to be honest. But it depends really where you are in terms of your startup. But earlier on in the journey, as much as possible, try to find a co-founder. You will have disagreements. You will probably have quarrels. Every co-founder does, trust me. You will have issues. It's down to the both of you to work it out, or the three of you, or the four of you. I've seen cases of five co-founders at once. So up to you guys to work it out and you'll find a way. But go with a co-founder or a few helps much more than being a solo founder, no matter how capable or how talented you are. Because it's very different being the one person to handle everything versus having a few hands to that you can actually rely on beyond just, you know, paying them, because they have an incentive. This is their company. They have their ownership in them. So that's what really would drive them to work with you.
So do you think, this is very hypothetical, if you did startup one and startup two with a co-founder, they would have worked?
Startup one, unlikely, because that was my fault. I did not understand the market well enough. I came up with a solution that frankly wasn't even that important in the market. It was just a good to have. You know, there are two kinds of solutions. There's a need and there's a good to have. And that was just a good to have solution that I created. So from the start, it was doomed. Even if I had a co-founder, I think I would waste his or her time, or depending how many people I would have pulled in. But startup two, if we were a little bit earlier and say that we managed to get things running during in an earlier timeline, perhaps we would have went on a little further. But again, going back to the bear market, I think sooner or later we would have encountered the same situation, but maybe as a bigger startup, and we would be facing the same problem, either get acquired or probably have to make the difficult decision and wind down. And I think market forces are things that, you know, even as a startup founder, there's so much you can really do about it. It's just, that's just how things are working at a bigger scale. It's out of your hands. A third startup, I mean, no complaints there. I'm happy.
Okay. Do you like hold on to your startups, the ones that failed and the ones that didn't? Like, this is a very tricky question. What is your relationship with your startup?
The ones that failed, they taught me much more than the one that I actually succeeded in, to be very honest. There were many things that, you know, from failure you can learn, and it's the more the merrier. Because, yeah, you know, if that one failure can teach you 10 things versus that one success can teach you 5 things, that one failure is much better. And, you know, I'm still young, 27 this year, so, you know, still trying to figure my way out and learn everything as much as I can and do better, of course. So how do I feel towards them? My first startup, I don't really look that much, because now with all that I know right now, I look back, to me, it looks like a very silly decision. It looks like a silly mistake. Why did I do that? My second startup, I feel happy because I failed, but I failed because of market forces or forces beyond my control. I didn't fail because of my own reasons. Yes, I could have went better with a co-founder and some decisions I could have done better, but overall, I was happy with what I did for my second startup. My third startup, it was fast. We got what we wanted, but I mean, because of how fast it happened and how fast things changed for us. So we founded in May 2023 and we were done in December 2023. So that's how fast we went. 8 months only.
That's max speed.
Yes, max speed. So, I mean, there were takeaways there, but compared to what I did in the Web3 space, that one, I spent much more time over there. Definitely, I was much more close to my Web3 startup. That's why I have a soft spot for when I look at Web3 startups. But, you know, the market is still bearish and I'm just hoping for a return. And, you know, I would love to look at more Web3 startups and, you know, potentially we could consider them in the future, but I don't know what the future holds for the market, and we're just watching at this point.
You also mentioned that you were a mentor at a startup club in Singapore. You want to tell a little bit more about that?
Yes. So I joined them when I was a founder. So this is a club of, you know, university level. So mostly people around my age group. So we all came together and we said that we wanted to have a group for startup founders, you know, because the startup journey is a very lonely journey. It's a difficult journey in terms of mental health. It's a difficult journey, you know, just trying to navigate your way through. You know, it'd be good to have like a support group, like a system to be behind, and like a kind of like an ecosystem, actually. And we didn't actually have that in Singapore until, or maybe we did, but I wasn't familiar with. But the 100 Club reached out to me back then, I think 2022, 2023, I can't remember when, but yeah, it was around there. I was still building startups. I was still moving in a certain, like, you know, that way. So I joined them as a member that time. So I was just a member. By the time I was done with startups, I was actually, you know, offered, would you like to be a mentor with all that you have learned? And, you know, you can actually give back to the community. And I said, why not? I would be more than happy to give back to the community because I didn't actually have a startup mentor, like for myself, for all three startups. So to me, it's really giving back and, you know, making sure that people know what, at least that they have a certain direction or where they should go, because end of the day, a startup is always about finding your own direction, finding your own niche and figuring it out yourself. But there are some things that a mentor can help with, and that's very invaluable. And I really hope that I could actually do that in return. So yes, I joined the 100 Club as one of the mentors. So we have a page, and yeah, there's a whole bunch of us over there. So yeah.
Do you mentor startups pre-MVP, seed, or you don't have a particular basket that you put them into?
It depends. So I have people that have approached me, you know, very pre-startup, even like, oh, I want to do this, but what should I look out for? You know, that kind of thing. So it's like, they haven't even built a startup. They haven't built a product. They say, but no, this is what they want to get into. This is the kind of life they want. I've had people like that all the way up to, you know, most recently the conglomerate. So big company, 400 plus employees. They have close to 30 companies total within that one group. So that's the biggest I'm actually working with. So yeah, I've seen completely one end to the other end of the spectrum. And, you know, it's a pleasure to work with them.
Okay. Do you, and this is a very, like, a question of curiosity, not ageism of any way. Like, do you feel like because of your age, people give you more respect, or do they just assess you? And till they tell you, they know what you've done.
Usually I try to hide my age just to avoid eyebrows because it comes off a little bit odd, you know, like this guy is 27 and he's, you know, advising certain companies that does he even actually have like the professional experience in, like, you know, like Spaceverse is a space startup from, over in Italy. I'm actually the commercial advisor over there, and, I'm not a space scientist. I don't know much about space, but the value I add to them is the commercial things. And that's where I come in. And that's the same thing for every other startup that I'm actually advising, that the things that I actually can add value in. I don't go to a startup that I completely add zero value in and, you know, put myself there. And even if given the offer, I wouldn't do it. So if I can add value and, you know, it's offered to me, if the terms are right, sure, we can work it out. We can definitely figure it out. But, you know, I don't put myself in the picture everywhere. And age-wise, as much as possible, I try to hide it because, you know, I'm not a fan of attention. I'm an introvert, you know. So I'm just a quiet guy just trying to, you know, figure my way through, you know, do my thing, figure out life and, you know, just move from there, you know. I've never been about fame. I've never been about, you know, wanting to be famous, wanting to be known, you know. That's just not me.
On the personal background, you are Singaporean?
Yes, I am Singaporean. I was born in India. I came to Singapore in 2000, so I was 3 years old. I lived here for 24 years. I got my citizenship a few years back after army, because we have a mandatory army thing over here. So we, all the men have to actually sign up for national service for 2 years if you are a green card, or which we call a permanent resident here, or if you're a Singaporean here. So at the time, I was a green card or like a PR, so I had to serve my 2 years. If you're a foreigner, yes, you're exempted. You don't have to do it. So that's just how laws are here.
And how was it? You said 2 years in the army. How was that experience generally? Oh, let's put it this way. How did the experience of being in the army for that long contribute to your startup passion?
As much as possible, that's a phase I try not to remember because, yeah, it was just not fun, you know, in any way. But one thing I will say about army was, you know, it drilled some discipline in, and, you know, that's the same discipline I actually carry in the business world, because when you do business, you need a lot of discipline. And, you know, that's why during downtime, I do things that are completely un-business related. If for my own sanity, if not, not just me, I think Mr. Wonderful from Shark Tank, he himself said, even the best businessmen out there in the world, because of the discipline they need for business, for their own sanity, they usually, during their downtime, engage in things that are completely different from what they do, just to make sure that they have that balance between the discipline of business and the flexibility of, you know, doing other things that, you know, keeps them happy and relaxed. So that's kind of where I am.
And what are the other things that you do that you can share?
Yeah, so I watch anime. I listen to some Japanese music, some Latin pop. Bad Bunny in particular, I really love his music. I'm so sorry. This is such a Gen Z thing over here, but yes.
No, it's great. It's great.
I tried a game, but you know, nothing has been out in the market, so I'm just waiting. I'm trying to get like a Switch 2. I heard that's coming soon, but I don't know. I'm not a fan of PlayStation. I used to have it actually, but it's just not my kick. I'm more of a Nintendo guy, you know. So I've had all the consoles so far, and I'm waiting for the next one right now. Yeah.
Okay. Do you consider yourself Indian, Singaporean, or a blend?
100% Singaporean. And the thing is, you know, Indians, we are our identity in Singapore, you know. So in Singapore, we have the Chinese, we have the Malay, we have the others, and of course we have Indians like me. But usually in the Indian community in Singapore, is mostly South Indian, more South Indian centric. But for me, I am a North Indian. Yes, we are still Indians at the end of the day. There are some differences here and there, but really, in Singapore, like we say, one people, one nation. So that's really how I look at it. We are all one people. We are all Singaporeans, regardless of language, race, or religion. So we are all one. That's the one proud thing I say. I am Singaporean, and you know, doesn't matter your race, doesn't matter your religion or the language you speak. You are a fellow Singaporean to me. You know how that's how we look at each other.
All right. And what do you think of the Singaporean ecosystem for startups in terms of just promoting startups and also funding?
I would say the ecosystem here is actually very good compared to many other places. There's a lot of government support. If you go through the right channels, there's a lot of funding support, grant support from the government, and they have an umbrella called Enterprise Singapore. So they actually do cover a lot of things. They actually have a lot of support. If you are like an entrepreneur coming up at the university level, there's even university level grants. There's all sorts of things there as well. And they do try to actually support the startup ecosystem a lot over here. It's just, yes, you know, we are yet to look at the next big things, you know. And yes, there have been big things, but I judge things based on the scale of the American side, because I've worked with the American ecosystem for so long. So if I use that as a measuring stick, yes, it's going to be a little bit difficult. But there have been some success cases, but I wouldn't say, you know, if you use the American measuring stick, then there'll be a different story. Because the market is very different here in the US. So, I mean, that's the kind of market I've worked with. Even though I'm Singaporean, I've not actually worked with the Singaporean market much. I have interacted with the founders. I've worked with certain people. But the ecosystem-wise, there are support systems. There's everything. But, you know, we're just trying to get the next few big things out there from our end. And you know, that's what we're looking forward to.
I like to ask this question of, do you consider yourself an entrepreneur or an innovator?
Yes, this question. definitely entrepreneur, not an innovator, because most of the cases, 95% of them, at least in my belief, people are either one of the two. So there are people who are entrepreneurs, there are people who are innovators. Very, very rare cases, you will have both in one. And the only example I can think of the both in one is Mr. Elon Musk, because he's actually hands-on building the thing and he's actually selling the thing itself. So that is the one and only person I know that is a perfect case of a both. If not even for the late Steve Jobs, he was the entrepreneur. Steve Wozniak was the innovator for Apple. And, you know, for me, I was always the entrepreneur. I was never the innovator. Even if, yes, some instances I did build it, but it was no code. And, you know, I had a lot of problems around the product side every time. So definitely I am an entrepreneur, and my specialty is really selling, working with people and connecting with people. That's where I actually excel at, versus, you know, being hands-on with the product. That's just not my expertise, no matter how hard I try.
Then do you think the two when you build a team of co-founders, do you think two entrepreneurs can work together, or do they have to be an entrepreneur and an innovator? Or at the end of the day, do these things not matter?
Ideally, try to get, if you're an entrepreneur, try to find an innovator. If you're an innovator, try to find an entrepreneur. You're going to need it, because that is really the best way to navigate forward. Often working with all that I've worked with and knowing all that I know right now, try to find someone that complements you in terms of skill set. You look for another you, it's, I don't think there will be much value to add over there, because there's so much that, you know, the same size of the coin can actually fit. So you want to look for something that's somebody that's different, you know, that's what you want to work with, and that's the kind of value you want to bring to your startup.
Then coming to a topic which it always fascinates me, which is that of the differences in generations. You are Gen Z, am I correct?
Zillennial in a way, because the millennial era ended in 1996. The Gen Z started in 1997. I was born in early 1997. So I have like a hybrid of both because of the margin. So on paper, I'm a Gen Z, but characteristics and, you know, behavior wise, I think I lean more towards millennial.
Okay. How, like, you know, I can ask you this question and feel like I'll get a less biased answer than if I ask maybe someone even my age. What is the main characteristics of these three generations? And if you can tell me the positive and negative as you view it, that would be great. I have some ideas in my head.
So it's Millennial, Gen Z, and Gen Alpha. Okay, Gen Alpha, hard to comment, because I think the oldest Gen Alpha right now is 13, 14 years old, because that's like 2011, 2010-ish. So Gen Alpha, I can't comment as of now, because, I mean, there are probably some very young entrepreneurs out there, but I haven't seen enough to comment, and I don't think it's fair for their generation right now, at least given how young they are. But Millennial and Gen Z, I've seen very few Gen Z founders, to be very honest. The big ones I've seen, I think I would say Zepto, so from India. Both the founders are Gen Zs, both slightly younger than me. That is the one case of a Gen Z, like the Gen Z founder team I've seen. Aside them, there have been a few others, but I don't actually know them hands-on to comment enough. Most of the cases, I've actually worked with millennial founders and Gen X founders. So that's really where my experience is in terms of, you know, since I can't really comment on Gen Z fairly, unfortunately, my own generation. one thing I really like about the millennials is the founders, they have a very systematic approach to, you know, how they want to tackle the business problem. You know, they come up with a point A, point B, point C, point D. That's at least my own observation. I could be wrong, but that's what I see. And when they have listed out the formula there, and this is how they want to move, and, you know, it's very systematic. Everything moves in a very orderly manner most of the time, at least from what I observe in the millennials. For Gen X, I've seen a few. Very unfortunately, I haven't had the privilege to work very hands-on with them. I've interacted with them on like a few occasions, but yeah, unfortunately, I didn't have much of a privilege to work hands-on. So unfortunately for this question, there's not much value I can add. It's very one-sided, unfortunately.
So let's say if you see a Gen Z founder and that person wanted to work with you, like, do you have any, because there aren't many of them that you worked with and you've seen, do you have any preconceived notions in your brain?
No. My first question will always be, why do you want to build this? What's your motivation? You know, why does this drive you? Why do you not want to do something ordinary like everybody else is doing? You know, majority of the general population is doing. Why do you want to go down this road? You know, it's not fun, you know, it's torture. So why do you want to do this? You know, that's the kind of things I would ask them, even for Gen Z, because, you know, usually they're young, they're hot-blooded, you know, this is what I want to do. Kind of like how I was a few years ago, but that's what I would ask them. But honestly, no preconceived notion. Even if, say, a Gen Alpha comes to me in a year or two, 15, 16-year-old founder, I really don't mind. I look at it from a very open point of view and I say that, yeah, sure, tell me what you're building. What drives you? What's your inspiration?
Okay. I mean, it's good to know, because I actually see a lot of the older founders. They're older than me. I always pause. I think I've been around enough to not to judge, but like it's interesting, right? You are much advanced in life. You can be at home, relaxed, maybe with your kids or grandkids, and you want to go out and get hit on your face every day. It takes a big amount of courage to do that. So I always wonder. So it's actually really good to go in without any preconceived notions when you are either building teams or assessing teams. What do you think your generation's take is on innovation and startups? This is a very general question.
One thing I can definitely say is Gen Z is so creative. They come up with things that even as a fellow Gen Z myself, I get shocked every now and then, especially, you know, the slangs they came up with, the kind of solutions they come up with. It's insane. It's really out of the box. You don't see this from previous generations. But again, we are a very tech generation. We were born in this tech era. So we have navigated through our entire life. We started with tech. So I think that's something that has something to do with why the kind of solutions I see from Gen Z is so out of the box, so unusual, but it works most of the time. So yeah, I think it's just growing up in that period where, you know, tech was actually booming from the start, the get-go. Yeah. So we are like the tech generation. And I think the one competing generation with us would definitely be Gen Alpha when, you know, eventually they come up and they too are a tech generation in a way. So yeah, I think definitely that changed a lot of things.
Are interpersonal connections, or the way they are built, they're nurtured, are they different for Gen C versus millennials?
It's a little bit hard to comment because people are so different. Everybody's very different on that. But I would say that Gen Zs generally are the more outgoing bunch, maybe because they're younger and, you know, they're still willing to, you know, go out and rah-rah with people. I believe at one point the millennials were also at that age and, you know, they also were young. They wanted to work with people, rah-rah with people. But eventually other commitments come on in life, you know, especially for the millennial side. They have probably other commitments to honor as well. Maybe family, maybe kids, maybe their spouse. For Gen Z, yes, some of them are already there, but for majority of our generation, at least for now, I think we are still, you know, we're still in that phase that we're trying to figure things out and, you know, still young. We haven't really gone into that commitments yet. So I think that plays a part, and really, at least as of now, that I do believe that actually plays a role in how people nurture their and cultivate their interpersonal relations. And really, it just comes down to maybe how many commitments and how far they are actually willing to go to honor this and cultivate and all that. It's really how much effort they're willing to put in and how much time also, because this is a time-consuming process.
We are almost in like wrap-up mode, and I want to talk a little bit about the new step that you're taking, which is that of being managing a venture capital fund. Why do you think this is something that you want to do for, say, 10 years? Because it's a long commitment. And what do you want to bring about, any changes in the venture capital industry? What is it that is driving you?
So I believe I've hit the ceiling already in terms of what I could actually take away working with as a venture partner or in the investment team as under venture capital. I believe I already hit the glass ceiling. And the only way for me to grow further is, you know, really venture out and start my own. And, you know, coincidentally, we met not too long ago, and then, yeah, now we work things out and this is where we are going. My one hope for the venture capital industry, given likely we will be here in Singapore, my moonshot really is to build the first tier one venture capital fund outside of Silicon Valley. Because right now, when people say tier one, everything is Silicon Valley. I want us to be the very first outside Silicon Valley. That is my one big goal. It could take us 10 years, it could take us more, but, you know, that's my big goal, end of the day. In terms of the ecosystem, I want us to be that venture capital fund that, you know, founders are actively trying their very best to get on their cap table the way they do it for Sequoia Capital, the way they do it for Andreessen Horowitz, the way they do it for Khosla Ventures. I want them to look at us that exact way, and that's when I can say yes, we have fulfilled our mission over there and we have gotten there. But yes, it will be a journey before we get to that point. And why did I do it? Because, you know, that there comes levels in life, and, you know, working with a venture capital fund, going in the investment team, and in a way this is like my final boss at a game level. So this is my final boss stage. So, you know, So this is the last stage I'm at, and you know, this is for venture capital. This is where I'm. This is the end point for me, at least from a venture capital point of view. And yeah, moving forward, this is how we're going to figure it out. And yeah.
Is there any industry that you really would like to say, this is, you know, it doesn't fit into the thesis of the current fund, but there are some industries that you are very passionate about that you would want to track, maybe invest later? Is there anything like that?
Maybe climate. Climate is definitely under my radar. I'm looking at them, but the issue with climate I have, at least right now as a fund one, we are not going to go there because majority of the climate tech solutions I actually see are hardware for obvious reasons. And because of its hardware and, you know, the burn rate and all those things, it's a little bit hard to, you know, work from our point of view. And in terms of value, I believe neither of us are actually well-versed in the climate space. And, you know, we actually have done things in the climate space, you know, we haven't. And maybe in the future, subsequent funds, maybe we bring on one or two people that are, you know, more well-versed in the climate space and we have a much bigger fund. It could be a consideration, but at least as of now...
And so I want to, you know, saying this is the next level and you're in the, did you say final boss? Is that the word term, the game term you used?
Yeah. So, you know, it's like going in different phases in life and, you know, now running your own fund is like, you know, being at the, like the final boss level of the game. So yeah, this is where I am right now.
Okay. I'm going to assume that it's not going to stop there, right? After 10 years, you're still going to push the boundaries, do something crazy, be inspiring. I'm sure that's that you've thought about it at least.
So right now I'm already running on many, many places and I can do so because I'm not married. I don't have kids. I don't have other commitments to worry about, you know, so I'm completely free to do all sorts of things in a few years time, maybe not. So in a few years time, definitely I'll carry on with this fund. There won't be any changes there. I possibly will go on and work with other places as an advisor, maybe on their board of directors somewhere, but I wouldn't be as active remotely as I am right now, because right now it's really, you know, this is the grind stage. This is where I need to build. I'm still young. I still have the ability to go out and do it. I don't have commitments to worry about. I don't have a family to feed, like, you know, that kind of thing. I'm still not there yet, but when I get there, I need to make sure that I have actually the time and energy to devote over there. If not, I will carry on to do what I'm doing, but I will be cutting down a lot of things when the time comes.
That's very encouraging. Your entire journey is really very inspiring. And I'm very happy to put your voice on the podcast because I think that being a startup founder, not once but many times, means learning from failures and taking responsibilities, right? And carrying through. And that I think is very, it's an important work ethic for everyone, irrespective of the generation. And you really embody that. So I am very happy to have you on Innovation Odyssey and I look forward to getting our fund on the road.
Yes, definitely.
Thank you, Max.
Thank you, Reno.